You're listening to STP Radio.
Welcome back to STP Radio. I'm your host, Smita Mishra, and I'm so happy to conduct another interview with one of our upcoming speakers at our Fall STP conference. It's so great to be part of this program, and I want to take this moment to say thanks to all of our followers that have been listening to our program. We recently made the top spot on Spreaker for software podcasts. And when I look at the top 10, I can say that we are like Usain Bolt in Olympics, who leaves second place and all the others far behind them. With all the shows on Spreaker, this is a high honor for us to be at the number one spot. And I just want to say thanks to each of you for listening. In case you have not yet signed up for STPCon, it will be in Dallas, Texas from September 19th through 22nd this year. And if you reach out to me, I can share with you a discount code that will save you on your registration. Be sure to check out stpcon.com, where you can learn more about the conference, the speakers, our special events, and our conference pricing. You can also follow us on Twitter, Instagram. You can find us at Software Test Pro on both of these. Today, I have with me my co-host, Paul Grazapi. Paul has been part of the STPCon program for several years now and is our resident automation expert for STP. He's a very liked and respected expert here. Welcome, Paul.
Hey, how's it going?
Great. So let's meet our guest for today. Today we have Richard Bradshaw with us. Richard is an experienced tester, consultant, and generally a friendly guy. He shares his passion for testing through consulting, training, and giving presentation on a variety of topics related to testing. He is a fan of automation that supports testing. With over 10 years of testing experience, he has a lot of insights into the world of testing and software development. Richard is a very active member of the testing community and is currently the friendly boss at the Ministry of Testing. He blogs at friendlytester.co.uk and tweets as @friendlytester. He's also the creator of the YouTube channel Whiteboard Testing. He works for Friendly Testing, which is a provider of consultancy and training within testing. He can often be found in the bar with a beer in hand discussing testing. So welcome to STP Radio, Richard.
Thank you. That's a lot of testing, isn't it?
Yes. So it's so great to have you with us. Let us know a little more about you and how you actually got into testing and anything more you would like to share.
Yeah, well, sure. Well, firstly, thanks for inviting me. I actually got into testing straight from university. It's the only job I've ever had. I'm one of the rare testers who's never done anything else. So during my degree, I did a placement year. And as part of that placement year, I went to a big bank in the UK where I became a member of their regression testing team, which basically meant rerunning scripts for an entire release. But that was my first kind of introduction into testing. And then when I graduated, I tried to join a lot of other graduate schemes, but unfortunately they weren't interested or I wasn't successful. So I thought, well, I enjoyed doing the testing. Let's see if I can get a job in testing. And I had 3 interviews in a week and I got offered all 3 jobs. So I took one of them. And then, yeah, you could say the rest is history. I've been testing for about 11 years now and then discovered this magical testing community about 4 years ago and now moved into speaking and training. So, yeah, it's a long journey, but all about testing.
I don't very often come across testers who have directly joined a testing job from university, though I'm one of them too. So we have so much to talk about, both some discussions on who is Richard Bradshaw as well as things you will be speaking on at STPCon. So, Paul, let's get started. Take it away.
All right, Richard. One of the workshops that you're gonna present for us is called Hands-On Testing with Proxies. Previously, we've had an interview with our upcoming keynote speaker, Miko, and he was talking about security. The reason we bring this up is because your workshop is talking about how we can spy on conversations between an application and its back end. I mean, obviously, you're talking about a different type of spying at this point, but the one kind of brings to mind the other. Tell us a little about what you're going to be discussing in this particular workshop and what you're hoping the attendees are going to be able to take away from it.
Yeah, thanks, Paul. So for me, proxies are one of the best testing tools that we have, especially in a mobile context. Now, the thing I really like is exactly, I use the word spying, but it's just being able to see what the app is actually sending and what it's receiving, because we can be tricked by the app into thinking that it's behaving correctly but we actually have no idea what data it got. So the best apps I've worked with are actually quite dumb. They don't really do a lot. All the intelligence is actually in the APIs. It's in the back end. So in order to test it properly, you really need to see what the app's being given to make sure it's displaying exactly what it got given. And the only way I've discovered to do this is either logging it on the server or using a proxy in real time. So I'm hoping that attendees start to realize how their apps are communicating, how often they're communicating, and then what data is being sent.
So actually, I found it interesting. I believe it was yesterday or the day before you actually tweeted out that you were having trouble or couldn't imagine testing applications without proxies anymore.
Yeah, the reason is because in certain contexts, for example, like for our app, it gets data from the API and that's what it uses to display various content. Now, I could go and create lots of content in the system every time I needed to test something, or I could just use a proxy and hijack the response. So if the response was just going to be 10 lines of JSON, I could save a file offline that's actually 1,000 lines of JSON and then just copy that in. And my app will think that all that data is actually in my database, but it's not. But it allows me to test more scenarios and a lot quicker. So I can trick the app into thinking that things aren't actually the way they are and allowing me to test scenarios that may have been not necessarily impossible to test, but certainly a lot harder to set up.
That's really cool indeed. Richard, let me be honest. You're becoming very, very quickly a household name for the testing community now, and especially in automation circles. So with the growth of this popularity comes a video series you're doing on YouTube called Whiteboard Testing. Can you tell us how you got this idea? What are you doing with it? And what you hope that your followers take away?
Yeah, sure. So the whiteboard idea was in twofold, really. Firstly, I bought a whiteboard just because I got an office and I wanted a whiteboard because every office has a whiteboard. And I just started using it more and more. I started using it for my to-do lists. I started using it to brainstorm ideas, to brainstorm workshops. It just became this great tool that I had at my disposal. Then I was Googling and YouTubing for some content related to regression testing at the time. And every video I found was either a conference talk, which obviously they're good, but they're about an hour long most of the time, or a lot of the other material was basically marketing material for testing consultancies or tool vendors. I couldn't find anything that was just short and snappy, like here's a bit of information and then here's some links if you want to learn some more. So I had the idea to combine the two. So I thought, what if I use my whiteboard? I can set up a camera and film myself in front of the whiteboard talking about various testing aspects and using the whiteboard as a visual cue, a visual indicator, because visualization for me is a great way of getting messages across. And yeah, I started it. I did a few and it became really popular, so I'm still trying to do more. In terms of what I want people to take away, as I said, it's a quick introduction to a topic. Like, you know, no longer than 10 minutes. The average is about 5. And you just get an interesting idea in 5 minutes. And if you want to learn more, there's lots of links at the bottom of the video where you can go and do that in your own time.
And did your followers ever give you any feedback on that? Like if people are really learning a lot from it, or did you have any idea? Like how's it going?
Yeah, no, I've been getting a lot of feedback. There's a few videos that have been shared a lot in between companies. I actually get a lot of feedback from Paul saying that he shares some of these videos.
Is that Paul?
Absolutely. My org here has every other week they do a QA learning consortium hour where they present a topic or they watch a video or something. They've watched a couple of the whiteboard testing videos already, so they've enjoyed those quite a lot.
So yeah, I'm going to continue to do them, and if anyone has any ideas or videos that they'd love to see, I'm always happy to hear them because it can be quite difficult coming up with topics sometimes.
And we can always send you our problems, right? That, okay, can you do a whiteboard testing on this topic? Because we are really looking for something here, right?
Yeah, please do.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so Richard, you recently wrote an article called Give Your Automated Checks a Voice. This is another one that I shared with my team, and I titled it, when I forwarded to them, I titled the email, "See, guys, it's not just me." It's always nice to hear someone else chiming in on similar topics, but with a different take or a different vocabulary. And the vocabulary thing is something you and I have batted around on Twitter a little bit before. You have a very specific vocabulary that you use with regards to both automation and to testing. One of the terms that you use frequently is automated check. And I want to give you an opportunity to kind of float out there to you when you talk about an automated check. What's the definition of that? What's the granularity of that? And how does that sort of dovetail in what's going on in that article there?
So for me, you know, the distinction was made by, you know, by James Back and Michael Bolton quite a long time ago now, trying to distinguish between the activities of a human and the activities of the machine in the context of testing. Now, initially, I didn't really quite get to grips with it, but in terms of my own words now, so for me, I still believe their definition of a check. So that would be an algorithm. It essentially can't observe anything else than what it's been told, and it only does a specific set of actions. So it can't observe anything else. It can't learn. It can't do anything different. It can only do the same repetitive process, which is why the word check makes perfect sense. And I've often found in conversations with people at work, you know, they're always saying, well, yeah, well, what is that test checking? And when they say things like that, to me, that's like a message to say that actually people do think they are just doing checks. And I had a good chat with Noah Sussman recently, and he pointed out to me that GitHub has started using the word checks now in some of their badges, which is pretty interesting. But the way I see it is that is exactly what they're doing. They are just detecting change. They are yes or no, pass or fail, true or false. They can't do anything else. And more importantly, they can't put the results into context. It takes a human to do that. So that's how I see the distinction being made.
So would you, from a granularity standpoint, would you say that a single check is at the script level, where you may have multiple assertions or multiple things that you are comparing against in a script? Or would you define a check as a single assertion or a single thing that you are looking for, and you may have multiple checks in a script? Or is it really sort of whatever fits the moment?
So I would go with the first one. So I would say a check is basically what someone would call a script. It can have multiple assertions. So those assertions, if we're going to, in terms of terminology for me, are basically coded oracles. You know, we've decided how we think something is right or wrong, and we've embedded that into our check or into our script. So you could have multiple in there. You know, when let's say you're doing a simple login flow on a website, you know, your end goal is not just to make sure that you're logged in. As a human, you're scanning the whole of that page to see if the labels are in the right place, they say the right things, the colors are correct, the process, the flow went correctly. So, you know, adding multiple assertions isn't a bad thing, but I would still say it's one check.
Oh, that's great. That's the way I would define it as well, which means I think you and I have a longer conversation to have on maybe a different STP radio session about the value and cost of flaky checks, which I think is how we got into this whole, how I got to the whole, what is the definition of a check and what's its granularity?
But yeah. No, you make a good point, though, Paul. There's nothing worse than a flaky check, because at the end of the day, you want it to be reliable and you need that feedback quickly. And if you know, they become flaky when you try and give them more things to do. But yeah, it is a conversation that's definitely worth having.
Here is a question. And Paul, I actually want you also to answer this, because it's a little philosophical question to me. While I was listening to Richard talk about checks and testing, the definition of it is really clear, and indeed, James Bach and Michael Bolton have done a good job in helping us understand the difference. But my question is, why are we so after this whole segregation? Why do we really need to segregate, or what is it that a human can do, and what is it that automation can do? And we segregate some as testing and then some as checking, where everything can work only when all of this is put together. And ultimately, it's one box where everything is put together so that we deliver value, so that we deliver right product. So why are we so hung upon segregating this?
So I don't see it as being hung up on. Like, for me, it's, you know, we all know that testing is a big job and it's a big process and it's continuously changing at the moment because everything around it is changing. But if we can separate it up into various areas, it allows people to focus on them and try and improve just that little tiny area. And also, there was a distinction made between, you know, this idea of that testing could be automated became this quite a big thing several years ago. It's actually less so these days, but there was lots of vendors pushing 100% automation and things like that. And it just allows us to have different conversations about different aspects of testing.
Richard, I actually agree with you on this. And I think that a lot of times we have to make sure people understand these terminologies because they are so misused, and especially because people are always looking for that 100% automation kind of thing, and they don't understand really that there is so much that only a human can do, and then there is a part that automation can do. And maybe that is one of the reasons why we should segregate it and why we should make it clear to the testing community.
The other thing is important is that for me personally, I will never force anyone to use my language. If I'm talking in a public space, I will be congruent with the language that I use throughout all my, you know, things that I publish. But then when I'm in a company or I'm in a client, you know, I'll talk to them about my language, but if they decide they don't want to use it, then that's fine. As long as we agree on what we mean when we use specific words, I'm happy to use any language they want to use. But when I'm talking to peers and we're trying to improve the testing craft, then I find it easier to make sure everyone's on a similar page.
I align very closely with Richard's philosophy there. I think knowing what we talk about is important. What we call it is less important. And as long as we agree on what we're talking about at any particular point, I think we can move forward from there. Richard is far more disciplined about his vocabulary than I am. I'm a little on the sloppy side there, partially because I just haven't put the time in to be more disciplined, and partially because I talk to a lot of different people and different organizations within my own company here that not everybody and not all the products align on a vocabulary because they are different products in different organizations. So I have to be sort of flexible that way, and it kind of comes out in the way I speak. But I think segregating the activities perhaps from a skill set standpoint might be interesting because not everybody wants to do everything. But I would prefer we just talked about testing, and then there are some parts of testing that we can use technology to help us do, and those parts we might call automation, or we might call automation assist, or we might call automation and testing, whatever the right vocabulary is for the domain that we're in. That's sort of my preference on the way to go forward.
I completely agree with both of you. In fact, I myself, I have got to that point in probably last couple of years where I have begun to believe in the importance of actually having a right vocabulary. It really helps. So, Richard, kids all over the world love to play with Legos. It's definitely a popular product, and I feel that the success of Legos has been in their randomness. So you can give someone a couple hundred Legos and they can make thousands of things out of them. It's all up to the person creating the masterpiece. So you have a workshop called Lego Automation, which we feel is going to be a very popular workshop because we've seen that in your workshop elsewhere for both automation and non-automation testers at the conference. So can you tell us how you came up with the idea and what you hope to accomplish with the class?
Well, it relates back to the earlier answer. The idea came around by staring at the whiteboard for a very long time, but my girlfriend should play a big part in the design as well. Basically, I was struggling with a class. Well, I wanted to teach a class, and I've been wanting to teach it for a long time, which is solely about automation, but doesn't involve any coding. Because firstly, there's so much more to thinking about how to use automation than just the code. Like, the code's an important part, but it is actually a relatively small piece of the bigger picture. And the second one was, when I've been teaching automation classes, you lose a lot of time to try and get people's machines set up, the environment set up, someone doesn't have an SDK, someone doesn't have admin permissions, and it eats into time. So I really wanted to teach a class that had no code, but was solely about automation. So having discussions on my whiteboard of thinking, well, what can we have as a product? Obviously, we have to script something. So I played around with some ideas, and then I probably saw something on Twitter. There's a lot of things like Lego Serious Play, and I kind of got the idea for Lego. And then a few iterations of a design, chatting around, and I kind of got to a point where I was sneaking code back into the exercise, and my girlfriend told me off. So we kind of redesigned it, and we ended up with this activity, which is, in principle, it's collecting Lego and building a tower. But obviously I've made it a lot more complicated than that in places. But what I want people to get out of it is this concept that you know, there is so much more than just the code. If you can work out the problem you're trying to solve, if you can work out how you communicate about that problem, then build a solution, but then how you communicate that solution and also keep that cycle going. And also, more importantly, identify when you shouldn't automate something, but perhaps you could automate a little piece of it. So we try and cover all those topics during the class. And the other great thing that's come out of it is it works for everybody. If you have no idea, if you don't write any automation and you don't know how to code, this class is great because this class will show you how you can help, how you can be involved and you can contribute to automation efforts. If you're an advanced coder and you've written loads of automation, this class will show you that you probably could improve the way you're sharing what you've automated, how you're sharing the outcome, how you're making sure everyone in your team knows what you've automated. So there's a bit in there for everybody. And it's really good fun too.
The one thing that comes to the top of my mind while listening to you talk about Lego is behind every successful man, there is a woman.
She's a qualified teacher, so she is really useful on how to design classes. You know, she really knows how to break down the activity of learning, and she's really influenced the way I design a lot of my classes now. So it's really great to have her around.
Indeed.
That's great. And the concepts you're teaching here, it's things that I've struggled with. And I think we've struggled with even as a conference to have someone come in and give a half day or a full day technical, you know, hands-on typing of the keys session where you have to have an SDK or an IDE or some sort of language installed, and not everyone does it ahead of time. Somebody brings their work computer and they don't have access permissions to install a certain DLL or something like that. Yet the Lego stuff really takes that level of complexity out, and you get right to the heart of the matter, which is how, when to approach automation in general. And then people can walk out and learn some of the technologies themselves, because not everyone is going to be using Selenium or QTP or Test Complete or Renderex. And they may switch jobs. They may be a consultant. They may be a contractor where they're on one job for 6 months doing QTP, another one doing Selenium the next 6 months. Having these core concepts is really, really key to being able to move forward in a healthy way to figure out how to apply automation to help people get their jobs done.
Yeah, and that's exactly what the class is trying to teach. It's about being able to identify and communicate. The tools themselves will change. The tools are always changing. The domain you're in may control some of the tools you use. But if you have those core skills of being able to identify and talk about it, you know, you can go and learn as many tools as you like. That's important to do so as well. You don't want to get stuck on one tool. You know, and then as I tweeted the other day, actually, then everything looks like a Selenium nail and you go around with your Selenium hammer and you don't see anything else. You know, there's a lot of tools out there.
Exactly. And it kind of leads me to my next question is, you have a different thought process when it comes to automation. Usually when we talk about automation, the first thing people will say, what tool do you use? What are you using for regression? How many scripts do you have? Questions that may be interesting, but they're not that important in the scheme of things. One of the things that I think you do is you look at things from different angles, and the session that you're going to be doing called Being a Testing Toolsmith fits right in there based on the abstract. Many times you talk about this North versus South discussion thing between automation engineers and hands-on testers, or people on one side won't really even consider the other side, either for lack of skill set or lack of understanding or fear or whatever it is. But in the session, it looks like you're encouraging the attendees to think of theory over tools, design over code, and identify where best to use your skills. It looks to me like the Lego session is a natural feed-in to this particular session as well. Can you tell us a little more about this session and what you're hoping people are going to be able to take out from it?
Yeah, so you're right. The session does kind of merge into this. It's the idea that the idea for me stemmed when, you know, I was writing a lot of automated checks and I was using very specific tools. But then when I was doing my testing, I found myself doing some of the things manually that I had actually built tools to do, but they were only solely being used by my automation. So I started extracting some of those pieces of code to allow myself to use them as I test. And then I just started building more and more tools that allowed me to test. Now, if you think about certain testing philosophies, when we're writing automation or automated checks, you know, we are essentially just building a tool that is supporting our testing efforts. We should always be focusing on the problem that is the testing problem. How do we mitigate these risks? How do we gather enough information to satisfy our stakeholders? Those are our problems. And we can do a lot of tools to use them. And when I started breaking down my skill set, I started realizing that I was actually quite a good programmer. I knew lots of frameworks. I knew lots of theories about creating or writing code. I knew lots of designs and models and patterns. And I started thinking, actually, I could apply these to many other things. So I really started doing like basically task analysis on my testing and thinking, where could automation help me? Perhaps this little job here that's taking me, I don't know, it takes me 10 minutes every time I do it. Perhaps I could automate that. It's not an automated check, but it's a piece of automation that's going to save me time and allow me to solve my testing problem. And I just started finding more and more opportunities, and I just really want to share with the audience, you know, these things that I've built. And I am just a tester, and, you know, they can build them too, and really start helping their team and themselves solve their testing problem.
That's great. That actually, it coincides very, very much with the session that I'm giving as well. I'm very anxious to see and have the attendees be able to hopefully attend both, see where we're the same, see where we're different, make their own determinations, and be able to pick up from Thursday afternoon when the conference is over and go back to their jobs on Friday or Monday or whatever, and actually be able to implement something. Just sit down and be able to say, you know what, I learned this thing at a conference, or I saw Richard do this thing. He has an example where he did this. I can't do it exactly that way, but if I made a tweak here and a tweak there, then it applies for this other testing problem or this other automatable problem that I'm trying to solve. So this should be a really, really good session.
Paul, I can vouch for your sessions. Your sessions are exactly the way you just mentioned. I have attended them, and I can tell the audience that your sessions are like, you can just get some key takeaways, and which are actually implementable the moment you're back to office. You can actually think what you've learned and implement it. They're not just theory. So, and I'm sure Richard will have the same kind of session.
Well, as Paul mentioned, you know, we've exchanged a lot on Twitter and blogs and things, but never really met. So yeah, I'm looking forward to his sessions as well.
Yeah. So let me ask you that. In fact, I'm sure you've seen the awesome program lineup that we have for this STPCon. And as you've looked over the keynotes, sessions, and workshops, what are some of the things that you are looking forward to that interest you? And you can tell us what things you hope to take away from them.
Yeah, well, the first thing one is obviously a few of my good friends are at the conference. So Hilary and Martin Hinier are doing a workshop with a ridiculous title, which I'm not even going to read out. But they're two fantastic people, and I've never seen them work together. So I'm really keen to see what they create. And then, as you said, the keynote. So I got to hear Miko at a conference recently, and it was a really interesting talk. So I think he's going to have a really good keynote on the state of the net. Always looking forward to keynotes. You know, you hope to leave them inspired and have some real motivation to go and do different things. So I think that'll be interesting. Obviously, I've made a note to check out Paul's sessions just because we relate so much. But then the other big thing for me is, I'm very rarely on that side of the pond, so to speak. So there's a lot of speakers on here that I've never heard of before. And I really want to go and check out some of these new speakers and see if we can find some new awesome people in the testing community that I've not been exposed to before.
Very nice. That's interesting. So thank you, Richard. Thanks for joining us today.
No, thank you for inviting me. I really enjoyed it.
Thanks to all of you that are listening to this interview. And thanks again for making us the most watched software podcast on Spreaker. Stay tuned for more interviews from our upcoming Spreakers. And most importantly, we expect to see each of you at STPCon in Dallas, Texas next month. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of STP Radio. You can find out more about STPCon coming up in Dallas September 19th through the 22nd by visiting stpcon.com. For more information, discounts, and more STP Radio episodes, follow us on Twitter @SoftwareTestPro.